Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition, this very special edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, on this 17th of July, 2014, as we discuss Indiana basketball. And I am joined by simply one of the greatest players in South Bend history, without question, Jerron Cornell. Jerron Cornell, of course, led Clay High School to the 1994 state championship with a game tie, with a game tying shot in the state finals at 30-10 in that particular game. He also would go on to Purdue, where he was twice third team All Big Ten, averaged 15 points a game his junior season, and averaged double figures all 4 of his years at Purdue. And he joins me to discuss that magical 1993-94 season with the Clay Colonials. Jerron Cornell, thank you for joining me. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, my man.
No problem. No problem at all. Jerron, before we get to the tournament, before we get to that season, I want to go back to the 93 season. You were a freshman on the team with Lee Nalon, Damon Harrison, Michael Lee, guys of that nature. You guys get to the sectional. To play St. Joe's, of course, led by Chris Quinn and company, and you lose a heartbreaking game. There was a particular play, and I'm sure you remember the play well, where Mark Verveit, the forward. I'm bringing back some memories here. Mark Verveit beat you on a backdoor play. He gets fouled by Lee Nalon. He makes the free throws. You guys lose 46-45. Talk about that game, that particular play, and how you carried that into the following season.
Wow, you took me back down memory lane. I remember that backdoor like it was yesterday. Trust me, I really, really do. And me and my parents and family talk about that even to this day. But you explained it right. You know, I remember going to a timeout, and Coach DeBates, that's all he said, was don't get backdoor. Don't get backdoor. He must have said it times in that huddle. And I went back out there, and I was getting backdoor. And everything seemed in slow motion. And I kind of took that to heart after that loss, and that actual play took that to heart, and just was motivated that I'll never let my teammates down again. And that was that moment I did let my teammates down, and that haunted me that whole spring, the whole summer. And I just went and worked my tail off that summer. I said, I need for people to forget about that. You know, I really did. I said, I need people to forget about that. And I kind of start questioning myself, you know, as a freshman, was I really supposed to be out there? And I probably gave other people some doubt also. So I took that real personal. And, you know, that was one of our motivating factors to get back down there. Not only that play, but St. Joe actually beat us 3 times that year, and they made it to the Final Four. And we felt that we was just as good a team and could have been in that position. But fate didn't have that way, and we worked as a team and always thought about that, and end up having a special season the following season.
Now, that particular year, and I'm talking about the 92-93 season, did you guys feel like you were a legit state championship caliber team, or what were the expectations in that particular season?
Well, expectations was to win a sectional first, because Clay hadn't did it in 10 years or 9 years prior to that. And we did feel we had a very legit team. We felt St. Joe had a very legit team, and each one of them games were pretty close games. And we thought third time's a charm, and it didn't work out that way for us. And, you know, there was St. Joe down there at the state final. So, and we took a van as a team down there. We watched them, and just was kind of envious, and knowing that we were just as good, and we weren't there. So that really stung all of us. So, like I said, we got motivated, and we really, really had an exceptional summer, preseason. We really worked hard, and our goal was to get downstate after that. No sectional, any of that. NIC didn't matter. We wanted to go down to the Dome, and actually that was our chant in the huddle.
Wow. So, I mean, you see a situation where, again, failure can lead to failure can lead to a championship, and that seemed to definitely motivate you. What was the – it seemed – now, keep in mind, you know, in 93, that particular – in 93, I came out there, as I always used to do during the summertime, to visit my father, hang out with Chris and his family and the whole bit. And I remember Chris was going away to Evansville. And I remember him just, and we've been talking basketball, tossing names around. And I was like, I said, what about Jerron Cornell? I just brought you that. Like, who is this dude? He's freshman. I was like, freshman playing, you know, varsity, getting a lot of playing time. That doesn't happen that often in, in Indiana basketball, back in the day, back in those early 90s, the guys paid their dues. If you were an exceptional, you paid freshman, JV. Rarely did guys go freshman, make it straight to varsity. So I'm basically, asking Chris, what about this dude? What can he do? And Chris said, hey, he has a nice 15-footer, pretty good player. And that was as much credit as Chris was going to ever give you. that's just how he is. The old Clay St. Joe's thing was serious, people. And I'm telling you, I'm going to bring up two of those games that one of them I was at. I was at one of them at the Holiday Tournament that particular year, Jerron's freshman year, and that was a bloodbath. St. Joe's won that game, and Jerron knows exactly what I'm talking about. But that it was a blood. Those two teams hate each other, and they played some great games. But you made a dramatic transition jump, I feel, from your freshman year to your sophomore year. Mm-hmm. Was it just the motivation of what happened in that St. Joe's game? What happened to your game per se? What took you to that next level that sophomore year when you averaging almost 17 points a game and doing what you did in that championship game?
Well, as you playing varsity as a freshman, like you said, in the 90s, early 90s, it was stiff competition around town, and freshmen weren't known for that. And I actually, going into my freshman year, that was my goal, to play varsity, and didn't think I was going to, necessarily play as much and as well as I did my freshman year, but that just lets you know what hard work could do for you. So that being said, me being on varsity as a freshman, hey, I had all eyes on me, I felt, and, you can't come back the same player, I thought. You got to get better each year, and that summer. Like I said, one of our motivation factors was to get downstate, and to do that, I had to become better. Michael Lee Nayline, all the players involved had to become better. And what I did, I trained. I went into what they call Rocky mode that summer, and I worked on my three-point shot. I worked on my ball handling skills, lifted weights, and just trained like I have never trained before. And I tell kids, when you put in the hard work, it's not easy. Good things, it's going to show. Good things are going to happen, and it everything's going to come to a light. And, that's what I did, and I put the pressure on myself, because if I'd have been the same player, that's all the people would have said is, hey, he hadn't got any better. And that was my major fear. So I never, ever wanted to hear that in out in society, walking while I'm enjoying a movie or at the fair or anything. I never wanted to hear that that kid didn't get any better. So I made it, my personal business to get better, and, that's what I did.
So you enter the 93-94 season. St. Joe's lost basically their entire starting lineup, with the exception of Tyron Harris going to graduation. So you guys now have the target on your back in terms of South Bend, in terms of Northern Indiana. There were already rumblings, and I heard them myself because I lived out there that particular year. That was the one year I stayed out there for the entire year, that there really wasn't a dominant team in Southern Indiana, that somebody out of the North actually had a chance, had a pretty good chance to possibly not only to get to state, obviously, but to win state. So those rumblings kind of start. Those rumblings were going around. I remember very well early on in that particular season. Talk about just having that target on your back as a team, getting everybody's best shot night in, game in and game out. How, what was that like to deal with?
Well, we knew that it was high expectations of our team, and the only team that we felt was in our way was St. Joe, and like you said, they had lost, you know, majority of their players, and still, you know, they were known for getting there. So what we did was focused in. We had one goal. I'm telling you, that's the most focused team I've ever played on. Everybody was serious, you know. So that preseason was the hardest preseason that I've ever been, you know, involved in. And we ran, we lifted, we did everything. And actually, we played, you know, for years together, and we played all that summer together. And we just knew each other. We knew where players were going to be. We knew we had pretty much everything that, you know, a championship team needed. We had speed at the point guard with Michael Lee. We had shooters and Chad Hudno, Charlie Bonds. We had, a two-dimensional player and myself inside and outside. And we definitely had the big man, Big Lee Nalon. But also, you know, we had guards like Stevie Griffin and you know, Kerry Pates and Joe Hunter. We all just knew each other, and we all knew that we can play this game. It was very competitive. Our practices were very, very competitive. And, you know, once we beat up on ourselves, things like that, we just couldn't wait to Friday night to go out there on the court. And we weren't cocky at all, but we had all the confidence in the world. And we knew we had everything it took. If we were going to lose, we lost it ourselves. So, and we ended up losing two games that year. And I think that was good for us because, you know, going undefeated, I felt, you know, you're not going to win it all going undefeated, and that you have to take some kind of, you know, loss and have some kind of setback where you had to get remotivated and things like that. And that's why I knew, you know, jumping ahead playing Valparaiso, that it's going to be tough to just go 30-0, you know, have an unmarked on your season. So we had a taste of a loss, and, you know, we wanted to bounce back after each of them losses, and we did, you know. And when we got to sectionals, we just was rolling. We felt we had to put it in a different gear.
So a guy on your team, a guy didn't miss a training session or a weightlifting session. That just wasn't tolerated on that particular team.
Excuse me?
I say a player on your team, you talked about how hard you guys trained in the off season and preseason. A player on your team didn't miss a training session or a workout session or a weightlifting session. That wasn't tolerated on that particular team.
No, not at all. And just, I remember the story, you know, I lost my grandmother that year. And, you know, I actually asked the Bates, I was like, you know, if I go to this funeral, am I going to lose my starting spot?
Wow.
And that was the nicest thing he said to me was, you know, family first, right then and there. And but that was the seriousness of it. You know, I was like, you know, I've missed the practice before and, you know, lost my spot, you know. And when you lose your spot, you're not just getting it right back. So, you know, it was one of them kind of things where our focus was, you know, high. Everybody came to play. Practice night in, night out, and definitely for games.
Well, and I was curious because I don't remember the particular you guys losing. Who did you lose to that year? What were the two losses?
We lost to Elkhart Central, and we lost to Concord. So, no South Bend schools, but you know Elkhart had our number. But you know, we got sweet taste of revenge on Elkhart Central in the regional, so we got that loss back. We still never got the Concord loss back, but I trade that for a state championship any day.
No question about it. And, of course, again, and people within Indiana will know that Concord is the same high school that the great Sean Kemp went to back in the day. So they were always known for basketball. I mean, a number of schools, of course, in Indiana are known for basketball, but Concord definitely are amongst one of the better high schools. in Indiana as far as basketball goes. So you're going through the season, and I remember I saw you guys play in person one time when I was actually at the game. Most of the other games I would watch on TV, but I was at the St. Joe's game in St. Joe's, packed house, of course. And I'm telling you, it was like, and folks, I'm not exaggerating as far as the intensity, you could just feel it. You could feel it in the arena.
Right.
You could feel it in the gym. And that was very, anybody hasn't been in that gym, people who know of that gym know how small that gym is. That gym is a bandbox. I mean,
exactly.
you have to leave the room to change your mind. That's how small
right.
that gym is. But that game, you guys did not look like a high school team. You guys looked like St. Joe's played hard for. It was a classic case of, you know, one team was just clearly superior to the other as far as talent. St. Joe's played extremely hard in that game. I think they hung with you guys for like a half, and then
mm-hmm.
talent took over. But I just remember you guys looking like a college team. Guys didn't even look like a high school team. I mean, just how much talent. With with Chad Hutton though, shooting light and shooting threes, and certainly rest in peace to him because he passed away
right.
just back in November. So I just wanted to mention that. But he's shooting right. threes from the corners. You know, you're doing your thing. Lee Nalon and Chip are going back and forth.
Yeah.
And again, you got yeah. it was an exciting game, but I was like this team. You know, there was no after that game. There was no question in my mind how good a team you guys were moving forward. Did you ever? Who was the leader on that team? Who was the driving force? You know, to kind of keep guys in check, to keep guys focused, putting Tom DeBase aside as the head coach. What player played that particular role?
Well, we had quite a few seniors on that team, so. All the seniors led us, but, Michael Lee was our quarterback. He was our point guard. He got us together. He huddled mm-hmm. us up. He let us know what defense we're running and what plays we want to run and things like that, And, that year was easy for me because all I had to do was listen, We had great leadership. So, the leadership was there. Like I said, Chad Hutno shooting threes, Michael Lee leading us, being a point guard, Lee dominating inside. Charlie handling his business, running the point, playing the two guard. And then off the bench, you had guys like Stevie Griffin coming in there and LeSean Nalon coming in, John White. We had everything, absolutely everything. We had size, we had length, we had speed, we had the IQs, we had everything. And, so I was just blessed to be on a team full of seniors that, was great leaders.
Yeah, you just mentioned all those names. It's amazing. Obviously your starting five, you had a great starting five, but the depth coming off the bench, I mean, you guys went, 8, 9, and sometimes 10 deep. A lot of cases that might be, it might be some chemistry issues, but it sounds like in your case, your team's case, it created competition within practice. How about that aspect of it?
Oh, yeah, like I said. Our bench could have easily been starters at any other school, hands down. But, with the number of seniors we had, and the leadership that we had, DeBates found the right chemistry, that made it work for us. And, when you got a team like that, your bench can, your bench starters, that's what I call them, our bench starters anyway, could come in and easily, like I said, play and start for another school. But one thing about that year that, our second unit, so I call them, they got plenty of experiences. It's rarely any of them games that year that our starters played the fourth quarter. We didn't even play the fourth quarter, and we trusted, we trusted our second unit to continue to handle business when we got a big lead, and for the most part, that they did just that. And, we would be actually relaxed on the bench and, you want to go back in because you just love playing, but at the same time, coach was a great coach. He knew what he was doing. He was giving them guys the experience that they needed also in game situations. So, hey, we had unselfish players. We had everything. Like I said, I can't name another team that I've been on that's been almost perfect.
How about you personally on that particular team? Again, you're coming off a good freshman year, solid freshman year. you make that jump as a sophomore to from good player to borderline great player. Did you feel that, and you mentioned how many seniors you guys had, Nayline was clear, was the man on the team in terms of you guys running your offense through him. He and Lee, anybody doesn't know about Lee Nayline, I mean, anybody, for my listening audience, Lee Nayline, Lee Nayline played in the NBA, okay? So the guy was a tremendous high school player, was good, was great in college at Texas Southern, put up ridiculous right. numbers, and had a solid NBA career.
Exactly.
So he was the guy on your team in that particular year. Did you feel though you had enough space to do what you did best, and that the guys allowed you to kind of like do your thing without it kind of, I don't know, throwing off team chemistry and things of that nature?
Well, yeah, I did, because everybody sacrificed a little everything, you know what I mean? Lee could have got 40 points a game in high school, you know what I mean? But he sacrificed, and Michael Lee, quickest point guard, he could have blew past anybody at any time. But we all understood our roles. That was the great thing, and we put our own selfish egos and numbers behind us, because for the sake of the good of the team. That was Coach D's favorite thing, for the good of the team. And everybody bought into that. Everybody played their role. There was nobody complaining about playing time. It just, like I said, it was a dream season. And you couldn't even dream it that way. But we were unselfish to almost a fault sometimes. We used to work the ball around. When a person had a shot, he'd pass that up to get an easier shot. And once we started doing that and learned that, you know, team ball really, really works, and then it's fun, hey, we were just having fun with it. I'm telling you, we just really was having fun with it.
So you get down to state, and clearly you guys are coming in. Now, there's a bias, I felt, during that time towards Southern Indiana basketball. Let's be real about it. South Bend never got the kind of respect that it deserved. South Bend produced talent galore.
Right.
So did you guys feel that, you know, Valparaiso, like Bryce Drew, Homer Drew, they were undefeated. They were kind of talk of the state. New Albany with Ladrell Whitehead. Did you guys go down there with a chip on your shoulder? Did you respect it?
Well, we knew we weren't respected, but, you know, at the same time, you don't hear much about the Southern teams until you start inching a little closer and closer. So we just wanted to take care of what we had in hand. And, yeah, we were hearing about Valparaiso. We never had watched any film on them, anything like that. So we didn't care about anybody else's stats. We cared about the Clay Colonial stats and how we were playing as a team and what we were doing. That's totally it. So when we went down there, we knew that I think they counted us out the first game, something like that. But we believe, you know what I mean? We definitely believe. And we were going down there not to go down there, because one thing we talked about as a team is if we go down here and lose, well, we didn't do nothing that St. Joe didn't do. We wanted to do something that nobody in our era had done. So winning it all was our only option, you know. I mean, talked about that a lot. We said, St. Joe been down here, you know, so what? So what if Clay get down there and do the same thing? We just was a team that got there, you know, even though that's a fashionable thing to do, you know what I mean, and a memorable thing to do just even to get there, especially in the era when it was just one class. But we wanted to definitely do something special, so our focus was locked in from the first day we got down there to the dome. We looked around the Hoosier Dome and we said, "Hey, we here now. We can't chant. Where we going to the dome?" That was one of our chants. Where we going to the dome? Who? And I'm like, "Well, we here now. So, what? We winning it. That's what's gonna happen." So, everybody was focused, locked in from the coaching staff to the last to the 12th man. I'll tell you that. So. We were ready and really didn't pay attention and care much about what anybody other than our circle thought.
So in the first game, you played New Albany. That game was, of course, a back-and-forth game. Did you feel when – now, the Ladrell Whitehead three-pointer was, again, was it at that point – were you guys ahead at that point, or was the game tied when he hit that three-pointer that ended up not counting?
I believe we were ahead, but that shot would have put him ahead.
Okay.
But even with that shot, it was so loud in there. I seen him travel, so I knew what the call was. So when that shot went down, hey, nobody even flinched. We knew on the court now. All the fans, they were heartbroken. The air lifted out of him, the New Albany fans. But, you know, long before that shot had hit his scene, you know, I had seen the travel anyway. And then I heard the whistle, and I knew Michael Lee knew better than the foul. So I knew it wasn't going to be no foul. And I, like I said, I watched him travel. So that ball went through the net. I actually was under the rim. And when it went through, it didn't bother me. I didn't look around like I was surprised or anything like that or disheartened at all. So
that's right. Now it's coming to me. It was going to be a 4-point play. He did get fouled on that, but like I said, he had traveled before he shot the ball and what have you. And it was going to be a 4-point play, which would have been a terrible way to lose the game. So there was no question in your mind that shot wasn't going to count, and that the rest made the call and what have you.
Right. No, not at all. Not at all. I knew that play. And Mike played excellent defense. That whole series, Mike played excellent defense. And I know he knew better than the swipe down and even make it look like a foul. So when that whistle blew, I was 100% sure that travel was being called. And it definitely was. So, you know, I never got nervous. Michael Lee never got nervous. And I don't think nobody on our team got nervous, you know. So we knew what the call was, and we just, you know, continued on. You know, Ladrell made a great play, but made a great shot, but he traveled in there. And if you go back to the tape, which I didn't watch plenty of times in my life, the ref made the absolute right call at the right moment. So, never was no fear.
So talk about the championship game. Now, you guys went to the semifinal. Win the semifinal versus New Albany. Was there any carryover to a championship game from in terms of there being like an emotional letdown? That was a physical game against New Albany, an emotional game to say the least. Did you feel that might affect you guys in the beginning of the Valparaiso game?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm telling you, that team was very disciplined. We were, like I said, senior led, and after that draining game in the morning, we went back to our hotels. Everybody went to sleep. Everybody got to sleep and got their rest. And you know, we coming back for the last game of the season. There ain't no way in the world we're going to let fatigue or mental letdown stop us from our dream, our goal. So, like I said, I was blessed to be on a team that with an older team, seniors. And so there was no goofing around. Everybody knew their roles. We were that serious and we were that focused that, like I said, we went back to our rooms and we got our rest and we got up. We actually felt better, like it's time, you know, and we there. So I remember loading the bus, going in there, walking in there, going in the locker room and like, hey, this is it, y'all. You know, 32 minutes, we going to be champs, y'all. We going to be champs. And, you know, that's what eventually happened after a drama-filled game.
So what was your mindset like when you step on the court? And then this is something that, you know, anybody who has laced up basketball shoes, in particular in the state of Indiana, dreams about. State championship in the dome, you're 32 minutes away, and on top of it, Indiana, unlike any at the time, and you mentioned it earlier, everybody participates in the state finals, not state finals, but in state tournament. No matter at that particular time, no matter how big or how small the school is, it's one of the things that made Indiana basketball unique in terms of their particular state tournament. You know, you step on the court. Was there any nervousness by you? Were you just zoned in? What was your mental mindset once you stepped on that court?
My mental mindset is that I was just focused. From the start, I knew I got my rest. My legs didn't feel shot from the earlier game, and you know,
Adrenaline. Yeah, to start with, adrenaline. Let's get this thing up in the air. Let's get it going. We were a bigger team than them. You know, I didn't, you know, I really didn't pay attention to the media like that. So maybe I would have been a little nervous if I knew how good Bryce Drew really was and that he was eventually going to be named Mr. Basketball. But, you know, we didn't, as a team, myself, we didn't pay attention to the media and what they said about the next people. We cared about what they said about South Bend Clay, and we cared about us. We was a real tight-knit group. So going into that game, it was just another – you can't say it was just another game, but it was a game that we needed to take care of our business, and we couldn't have a bad game. You know, this is not the game to, you know, be messing around in, and we want to start, you know, start out, get a good start, and put some doubt in their heads. We don't want to be the ones doubting. So that was our mindset. So, you know, no nervousness, no anything, just it was business. And when I say business, I don't want to keep elaborating on our focus, but we were real focused. I'm telling you, we were real focused.
So talk to me about you get to a point in the game, very good game, high-scoring game, very high-scoring game, a lot of offense. You guys are down 8 points with 58 seconds left. Now, in the NBA, 8 points, 58 seconds left, three-point shot, 24-second shot clock, seen it done before. Even in college basketball, you know, Maryland, Duke, a decade, you know, going in 60 seconds, seen a 10-point lead go in a minute. So we've seen crazy things happen like that before on the college and pro level. High school basketball, that's impossible. There's no shot clock. You know, all the team, if a team goes to four corners, like North Carolina used to do back when Dean Smith first started, the game's over. What happened in those 58 seconds to and again, I saw the game, but I just, you know, I don't have the play-by-play, you know, remembrance that you have, the fact that you played in the game. But what happened that turned that game upside down? And we know what happened to force in overtime. We'll get to that. But what was your mindset at that point in the game, and then what happened?
Okay. Naturally, your mindset would be like, you know, you kind of start getting deflated. But at the same time, our coaches said, keep running our offense, playing defense. Keep running our offense, keep playing defense. And that's exactly what we did. I mean, I remember listening to the game, and we were working that ball around, and the commentators like, I don't know what Clay's doing. They have got to shoot the ball, and we were running. We were just passing it, till we got what we wanted. And you know, when you listen to your coaches, you know, good things happen. They tell you things for a reason. And we didn't panic. Like I said, if we would have been a younger team, we may have panicked and, you know, shot the first shot. But we worked that ball around, scored, and played defense, I remember, and got a foul. Well, got a steal, actually. And I think we cut it to four. Then what happened was we had the foul, and I think they hit one of their free throws, maybe. I can't recall correct, but they hit one of their free throws, missed one of their free throws, something like that. And I remember coming back down, Chad Hutnell hitting a three-pointer, and we were down, I think, three maybe or something like that. And hey, when I looked up at that scoreboard, I'm like, oh, it's a game. You know what I mean? It's a game here. So that recharged the whole team right there and gave us back some life. And you know, like I said, I think they came and hit split on the 1-1 again. And you know, that put them up four or something like that. But anyway, they was up 3 points and with 8 seconds left, and coach came and he drew a play up, and We ran the play. We just ran it, and you know, I hit a shot to make, you know, force overtime. So we just stuck to what we was known to do all year long. We never panicked, and I think that's due to the maturity of our team, and we just always felt that we could win. You know, we could win it, and don't give up. And that's one thing Coach always said: never, ever, ever give up. Never give up, and we didn't. So, you know, kudos to our coaches and players out there having the right mindset to, you know, not get nervous and not panic and, you know, finish the task.
Talk about that shot. The play was designed for you to take that shot. Did you, I mean, you know, what was your, what were you thinking when the play, you know, you come out of timeout and that play is being, and the play is being called for you to take that particular shot? What, was there any, you know, hesitation that you said, like, wow, I can't, you know, this is, I'm, he's calling my number, I'm, you know, sophomore, you know, he could have called, you know, Hutno's number, he could have called Charles Bynes, and I want to get to Charles Bynes' performance because it was tremendous in that game. And he could have called, you know, not Lee Maylock because he's not a three-point shooter, but for him, for the base to call your number and take that particular shot, what was your thought process going once you guys got back on the floor?
First of all, I thought it was a great coaching move because, of course, Chad Hutner was our best three-point shooter, and Charles was a great three-point shooter himself, and I shot maybe two or three three-pointers a game, you know, that whole season. But my whole thought was just do what the coach said. He told me to run down straight down the middle of the floor, go under the basket, and just curl to the top. And Chad and Chad and Charlie, they would just swing on the baselines and, you know, Mike, find the open person. And like I said, I think they knew that they put a little more pressure D on Chad's end of the floor where he's swinging, where he's swinging on the baseline, and also Charlie's. And I curled to the top, and by the time I got to about the free throw line, I think that's when they like, oh, shoot, you know what I mean? Like somebody leaping
right
open at the three. And Michael Lee, he got it to me. Great pass. And I just turned, and I had time to turn, square up, and shoot that shot, you know. And I knew what kind of work I put in that summer. So to hit that, you know, only made light that hard work pays off. Definitely pays off. And, you know, so I didn't rush the shot. And I think, you know, me being left-handed helped me out a lot because I look at the replay and Tim Bishop, who was a very great athlete, rest in peace himself, he was all over my right hand. So, you know, I just had got the shot off. And, you know, I think it was luckily I was a left-hand player. So we just ran the play. And, you know, so I didn't feel nervous at all. I knew when we hit it, I actually – ran back on defense, you know, because, you know, I'm thinking with our luck, man, they've been and threw it in and hit a half court shot, anything, or got it up the court.
Right.
I didn't know. All I know is I hit the shot and I sprinted back on D and heard the buzzer. And then it was, you know, a little bit of celebrating, but not much because we had to stay focused. We like, hey, this ain't over. You know, we still got 3 minutes. Everybody, we created a lot of joy and excitement for the fans and things like that. We were still focused. We were still ready. We were still serious. So it wasn't no pre-celebration about to happen. And, you know, we forced overtime, and then, you know, the rest is history.
Did you sense going to overtime that they were kind of like, you know, dejected by, you know, going to the overtime in terms of their body language? Did you see anything in their body language that said, like, wow, we should actually, how are we still playing?
To be honest, no, but at the same time, we had worked so hard, conditioned so hard that year that, you know, we knew we were in better shape than them. And that's one thing we said in the huddle, we're in better shape, we built for this. And, you know, they weren't as a deep a team as us. So, you know, their players logged in a lot of minutes earlier that day and, you know, definitely that game, which was a real exhausting game from that standpoint. So we just knew, you know, that we was more energized than them and actually had the momentum going on our side. So, you know, we figured that, and, you know, like I said, the rest is history. We went out there and actually handled them pretty decent in the overtime.
Yeah, you guys outscored them 15-10. A couple things stand out. The Lee Nalon dunk, I remember that very well. That basically put the game away. And then I remember him cramping up after that dunk. I was like his tank is on E. But like, at least he dunked
right
first before he cramped up. And
right.
The Charles Bynes performance. Charles Bynes had 20 points in that game. Nalon really got held in check in that game. I think he only had about 15, 16. He really was held in check. Had a pretty good game. But talk about Charles Bynes in that game. He hit some big shots for you guys.
Okay. Before I elaborate on that, I want to say Lee, he was in foul trouble the whole game, and for him to end up with 16, for him to end up with 16 points was actually amazing to me. But no, Charlie Bonds, that was no what he did. That was not close to a surprise to me. I played AAU with Charlie all my life and knew Charles had a game, and you know. But when you're playing on a team like we had, you got to play a role, and Charlie sacrificed his role. And he, to me, I always say Charlie saved his best for last. You know, he saved, definitely saved his best for last, and that's when we needed him to do what he did, and, you know, he did it. But, no, for me to be surprised, I was not. No, other people that didn't know Charlie had a game like he had, now they were surprised. But I've seen it all my life, and, you know, that's why our team was so special, because, you know, Charlie can come in there and run the point. And to give Michael Lee a break, and Charlie can also come in there and become a scorer also. So, you know, like I said, no surprise to me, surprise to others, but I always just tell Charlie he saved his best for last. Yep.
No question about it. He was just phenomenal in that game. His performance definitely, other than your shot to send the games overtime, that his performance stands, it stood out to me, even as a 15-year-old watching that game.
Right.
So, You win the state championship, the MVP of the tournament. You had 30-10 in the game. What was it like after the game, when the game was over? Talk about that feeling, and what was it like on the court celebrating and with your teammates?
Oh my! I mean, it seemed like a long time coming, and you know, realizing our dream, you know. And actually, the year before that, we didn't even really know about rings. We seen Jeffersonville. I think they had won state, and they had Richmond. Yeah, Richmond. They had won state, and we got a chance to see their rings, and we like, whoa! That was the other motivating fact. Like, we get rings if we win, you know. we didn't even think much about the gold ribbon that we got. You know, but we were thinking about the rings. That's all we talked about was rings, rings, rings. So when we won it, that final horn went off, and we celebrating, you know, it's a feeling like no other. You know, it's very hard to explain unless you've been in a similar situation where you worked so hard for something and you actually did this. And it took a process. It wasn't nothing you can go out and do in one day. You know, and then got what you dreamed for. This is something we dreamed about for, you know, years. And we played together, that team, you know, pretty much since we were, like, in the sixth grade. You know, we've been together. So to actually win it when it really mattered and on the most important stage was just, you know, unexplainable feeling. And, you know, I say I wish every kid could feel what we were feeling, what I was feeling. But it's just unfortunate that everybody can't feel that. But I do. I wish all my friends could feel it. It's just a feeling that, like I said, you can't believe. And, you know, you don't even think about the future when you win it. But, you know, it's something that's with you for life. You're a champion for life. I hear about it every day almost, you know, especially, you know, 5-10 years after, you know, I heard about it every single day. You know, now people still talk about it. If you go on Facebook now, it's a lot of people talking about the state championship and me hitting that shot. And, you know, at the time, I didn't know how big of a shot that was. I mean, it was a big shot because it sent it as an overtime. But, you know, that pretty much marked my, I guess, status in Indiana history, in state final history, not just South Bend. But, you know, I'm actually very proud of that shot, you know, individual. But I'm more proud of the team and then, you know, the championship that we won and brought back to our city.
No question about it. I mean, you know, 20 years later, I still kind of remember it like it was yesterday. And it was like, you know, and we talked about this earlier in the program, there was no love lost between St. Joe's and Clay, to say the least. But, you know, when you guys were doing what you, once you guys got out in the state, it wasn't about that. It was about South Bend and the city as a whole. And I really thought about that during the course of watching you guys games, and especially down there, you know, once it came to the state championship. And, again, you guys, first team from the city of South Bend to win a championship, I think going back to the 50s, I believe it's 57. So it had been it. Yeah, yeah, it had been a long, it had been well over, you know, 40 years or so. So that was, you know, it was great for the city of South Bend. Really told you about the wealth and depth of talent, or quality of talent that was in the city of South Bend that had been there for years.
Right.
I mean, been there going back, you know, before we were born. So that really kind of put South Bend on the map from that standpoint. How about two gentlemen I'm about to mention and their impacts on your life as well as basketball career, Pat Magley and James Lacy?
Oh, okay. Well, I go with Pat Magley first. Everybody in town knows who Pat Magley is and the program he run at Heroes Camp. I met Pat when I was 13 years old, and you know, he let me play with the older adults down there, and I, you know, was holding my own. So he, I guess he seen something in me, you know, and he began working with me. Well, first of all, asked me did I want to work and how good did I want to be and things like that. Okay, so, you know, I learned the game of basketball from Pat. You know, I had some natural things that I just could do, and, you know, I had big hands, and, you know, I had a decent IQ. Well, I had a high IQ, I would say, you know, for that age. And, you know, when I was going to enter my freshman year, you know, Pat looked at me and he said, hey, if Coach DeBase asks you, do you want to play varsity next year? Look him in his eyes and tell him you want to start. And I cracked up. I laughed. I did. I remember laughing. I laughed hard. You know, I was like, man, I just want to be on varsity, really, to hear the band, and, you know what I mean, and be out there when the crowd there. But, you know, for me to tell him I want to start, that was humorous to me, real humorous. But what he said is, we're going to put in some work this summer. And, you know, I was like, put in work? Okay, in middle school, you know, you just go off your size and, you know, the season over. Then, you know, I hoop at recreation and Heroes Camp and things like that. But put in work, what that mean? You know, he was like, we're going to train. Train, okay, well, show me how to train. And he showed me how to train, and it wouldn't, not one thing he told me to do that I bagged out of, you know. So I went to putting vest weights on, running sand hills, running miles in the sand, jump sole shoes, weights, more miles, then play, then get something to eat, then go back and play some more, dumbbell curls, push up. I went to, that's when I told you I went into that Rocky Balboa training mode, and that's where I began to learn to work. And not only that, he was showing me how to love people, how to love myself, and, you know, he was bringing the word, you know, the word of Jesus to me, and you know, all that was what was definitely needed in my life. And I just sat up under Pat and soaked up, you know, things like, you know, a sponge. And, you know, I knew his history, and I knew he was a great player. I knew his brother was a great player also, even in Indiana, Mr. Basketball with the Kansas, and, you know, later on went to the NBA. So I said, why wouldn't I listen to him and figure out how to train and how to become better? So talking about Pat Magley, I can talk about him all day. I mean, but he's definitely a major impact in my life, man. I love him to this day. Actually, I hadn't spoke with him in quite some time, but I really need to get back in touch with him. But, you know, he was a huge inspiration. And so, you know, I want to leave that right there. But, you know, the next person we were talking about a huge impact in my life is James Lacy. And Lacy, he was a huge impact because he put me on the national scene early. I mean, I was a seventh grader, and he had a team with Chris Quinn, your cousin, Mark Vervaid, Damon Harrison, Tim Thomas from Adams, Chris Ham from Adams, Matthew Schlegelmelch from Michigan City, who was a sharpshooter,
Sean Durda, who played at St. Joe, also on the teams that beat us. So we had a team, DeMarco Taylor from Elkhart Central, who was a great player. So we had Gavin Weber also that played with me at my freshman year at Clay. So we had a team full of experience. We had a team full of size, team full of everything. But that team made it to the Nationals that year in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and James Lacy invited me to get on that team. And I'm thinking, yeah, I ain't going to get no playing time. So I get down there, and you got players, older players. I'm watching Jerry Stackhouse and Daryl Honeycutt and players like that, Trajan Langdon, and all these players that were great even at the time, you know, their senior high school. So he let me in a few games. I got a couple baskets, got some rebounds. You know, I didn't get a lot of playing time, but I got some experience. And I thank Lacy to this day for that, you know, because when I got back home, Southern Florida called my house. And I told, they was like, we'll sign you to a scholarship right now. You want to come, you know, if you want to come. And I was like, I'm going into my freshman year in high school. And they was like, what? And it's like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, because they weren't supposed to be in contact with me. So they're like, I apologize. I'm sorry for contacting you. But just know, you know, you said just know in the future that we're looking at you. And that got my excitement going right then and there. You know, I'm like, oh, wow, somebody care about me already, da-da-da. But, you know, I stayed with Lacy. I played on his younger teams, and we went all over the nation. And it's funny that you bring up James Lacy, because I just sent him a Facebook reminder telling him, hey, I remember when you was, when you used to load the van up and take us all over. You know, yeah, you would take us all over. So AAU tournaments, who playing ball at Notre Dame, he'll load up everybody and get as many people in that van as he can and get us out there on the court, you know. So his impact and his parents' impact, you know, I can't leave him out, was definitely, you know, huge for me, you know what I mean. And he got me, you know, really going in this AAU circuit and this national circuit. So I was most definitely and still am most definitely thankful for, you know, those two people being great inspiration.
That particular, and I had, like, the unique thing about this particular interview and I'm doing with Jerron right now is I have personal connections with both those guys. I played on a James Lacy team as well and played at a Pat Mavely Heroes camp a couple times. I know both mm-hmm. those guys very well. Lacy, I remember that particular tournament you're talking about. That stands out because Allen Iverson beat yeah. Jerry Stackhouse's team in the finals. I remember that game very well. To this day, I remember that game very well. And I was like, who is this midget going around? Iverson probably was like 5'9 at the time. I was like, how they can't stop this dude? Like, who is this dude? Like, Iverson. I'm like, who? I never heard him. I heard the Stackhouse. The Stackhouse was one of the best players in the country at that time. But I don't think anybody had heard of Iverson as far as basketball goes. I think he was more known for football at that time. But, I remember that tournament very well. That's what I'm talking about. And as far as Pat Mavely goes, you're right on the money with Pat Mavely. Pat Mavely is a guy who not only loves basketball, he loves life. I mean, I remember the dude, he came and picked me up and took me to Heroes Camp, took me to his house before he went to Heroes Camp. He was so amped, and he's probably going to kill me if he hears this story. He was so amped, he's like, Cyril, I took 6 dumps this morning, I'm hyped. I was like, this dude is crazy. But he was just how, yeah. He was just how passionate he was about just life and basketball, and he, you know, he would talk to you and chill and stuff like that. He's obviously impacted thousands and thousands upon young males, young black males over the course of his lifetime. And again, a tremendous basketball player. I remember Chris talking about he couldn't beat him because he just knew how, his body, and he just, I mean, the dude could play, as you well know. So those two guys definitely had a major impact on basketball in the city of South Bend. And overall, you got to have to say the state of Indiana. You are now at a stage in your career where you, I understand, you're coaching girls varsity basketball. How's that been so far, making it through your first year?
it's been interesting. I mean, it's very different coaching girls than boys. You got to deal with a lot of issues that don't have a thing to do with basketball. But I enjoyed it. Our team, we didn't have a lot of success this year. We were very, very young, and pretty much no seniors at all. We had a couple, but they were transferred in, so they weren't part of the program. Not to say I didn't appreciate them, but because I really did. But it's a build process, and you learn to be more patient. And I'm already a patient person, but I've definitely learned to sit back and be a little more patient. You got to learn your players. You got to learn how to each of them, get motivated or not, because and I'm not a screaming kind of guy, never have been, but I just ask for more commitment, and right now, I was at a school where basketball for girls weren't a high priority, so you think they just playing the game just to play the game and be on a team, but with my experience and my competitive nature, I'm trying to build something different. So it's gonna take a while. I'm not looking to win no state title next year, but or the year after. But I just want to keep building, bring better talent in, and just go from there. And we'll just see how things turn out in the near future.
How tough is it? Because you certainly were a great high school player, had a lot of success in college. How tough is it to be the kind of level of player you were, and you're coaching girls? And you see, the girls maybe not bringing that same tenacity or commitment to the game that you brought when you were playing. Do you have to kind of separate yourself as a player or with the player that you were versus now being a coach? I talk about that.
No, that's very tough. But like I said, it takes patience. And, I can't, hold these, ladies accountable for the kind of player and the passion that I had for the game of basketball. I played it, all my life, and, some of these girls haven't played it all their life. They've only been playing for a couple years maybe or whatever. And, you gotta instill that drive in them, and then at the same time, it's a two-way street. They gotta want to love it. They gotta want to be, practicing. They want to have to get better on their own. And, get better on your own is playing all year round now. Players play all year round now. If it's something you love, something you want to get better at, you got to put in the time, you got to put in the effort. So, if the girls, take to that, then, they'll be fine, because we got some talent, we got some height, we got some quickness and things like that. We got some pieces. We just got to get everything together.
Yeah, you brought it up, and there's no question about it. There is no such thing as the off season anymore. Even at high school, middle school, with the emergence of these AAU programs, in a lot of cases, AAU is even more prevalent than the actual high school season, which I personally have a problem with. In certain cases, I think AAU have too much power at 2014. But it's just like you said, it's no off season, constant training and what have you in terms of trying to become a better basketball player. One last one before I let you go. Who's the best player you've ever played against?
Whoa. High school, college, what? I mean, that's a pretty broad question, man, and a tough one at that.
I would say high school. You put college aside, I would say in high school, who's the best player?
Whoa, the best player in high school that I've played against. Kobe Bryant. Yeah, there you go. I was at a
wow. Oh, that solves that. So you actually played against Kobe?
I played against Kobe. The summer of '95, going into my senior year, the NBA had invited 65 of the top seniors in the nation to Princeton, New Jersey, on Princeton's campus. And I didn't know who this kid was, but he walked it like Michael Jordan. He was out there playing like Michael Jordan and this, that. And, like I told you, I never was big in the media, didn't read a lot of slam magazines and rankings and things like that. So I didn't know who this kid was. And everybody else would be. I was hanging with, Chris Carwell and Jermaine O'Neal, during the week. And they would be like, and Shaheen Holloway and Tim Thomas, guys like that. I was hanging around with them. And they were like, that's Kobe Bryant. But he never talked to anybody.
You know, and I didn't know him, so you know, we would all meet in the lounge at, in the evening, and they would give us a pizza and a six pack of Coke, and we sit around and fellowship and talk and chat it up, and this guy always got his pizza and his Coke and walked back to his dorm. And so when they start talking about him being, you know, kind of antisocial in the NBA is early years, I knew exactly why. No, yeah, I mean, I put that he was trying to be that great. You know, he was just going to be that focused, and you know, it paid off for him. He kind of got criticized earlier about that, but he was trying to be the best, and you know, it took a light. When what he was doing at that camp in 1995 against high school players, he started doing that about his sixth or seventh year in the NBA. He did exactly what he wanted, and I seen his maturation. And so I always loved Kobe Bryant, you know, for that. Even when people say, "Oh, he's selfish, he don't talk to his teammates, he don't play video games," this that, I knew he wanted to be focused early in his life, and he did it his way, and his way got him the success that he got has today, and you can't be mad at anybody for that. So, Kobe Bryant, that's who. Oh, and let me add one last thing. I didn't know who this kid was until, you know, I was headed to Purdue. I was already on scholarship to go to Purdue, and that summer NBA right. draft came on, and I'm sitting back, relaxed, and you know, I didn't know his name or anything, but they said with the 13th pick, you know, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant. I stood up. I said, "Wait a minute!" I said, "That was the kid that was just at the camp in high school, you know." And so it blew my mind. I was like, "Whoa! Is he really that good?" Yeah, I guess so. You know, what 17, 18 years later? Yep, he was. So
yeah.
That's a story that I'd never forget. You know, I share that with people from time to time. So there you have it, Kobe Bryant, best high school player I ever played against.
Well, Jerron, it's been a pleasure talking to you over the last hour. Certainly brought back a lot of memories, I'm sure positive memories from your standpoint in leading Clay to that remarkable 1994 state championship. As always, this is the Cyril Quinn Review. Thanks for coming on, man. Keep in touch.
Man, my pleasure. My pleasure. Will do, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, no problem.
All right. Take care.
All right, take it easy. Jerron Cornell, just a class act in general. I mean, he, you know, guy comes on a Thursday night, probably busy, you know, probably getting ready for the next season to join the program. He did a wonderful job at breaking down every aspect of that particular season, the rivalry set with St. Joe's, the work ethic that it takes to become a great player, the relationship with Pat Magley, James Lacy. Tremendous job by him. And thank you, and certainly thank you for listening to this latest edition of Cyril Quinn Review. I will see you next time. Have a great evening. So long.